This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Gugat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
This is the second to last episode of season two of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. Poobah, it's Cyber Monday. Are you finally going to buy Jeannie something nice?
Yeah, I actually did a little shopping over the holiday weekend. I usually like to get out there and try to get a handle on what I'm seeing from a personal and anecdotal perspective. But yes, I will buy something on Cyber Monday, Mike. You can be sure of that.
Wow.
What about you, JP?
I'm not buying a thing. I didn't participate in Black Friday. Won't participate in Cyber Monday. I did go to a Bloomingdale's yesterday, just randomly, but had to do a little channel check for a friend.
What'd you see?
Anytime you have to take an escalator, you know, in some type of mall or store, it's generally not for millennials. And I saw a lot of older people for sure, but it was actually packed. I was surprised.
Never short of taking a shot at us older people, John.
Well, it's just interesting. Just the bank comment we were talking about before,
yeah.
The shopping, you know, I don't want to ruin your thunder, but on the Black Friday stuff, we'll have to dive in on the numbers. I'm curious on mobile versus in-store, because it sounds like you went to in-store.
Well, as the Generation X guy that sits on the fence of old and new that tries to bridge the gap between you two guys and keep you friendly, let's keep moving. But both of you guys are traveling this week. Poobah, where are you headed?
Yeah, I'm heading to Austin, Texas. In fact, I'm leaving a little bit later this afternoon for the running event, lovingly and known as TRE. Some people even call it Trey. But no, I'm really excited. This is I've been to about five or six of these running events. Austin does a wonderful job of hosting it. I believe this year they have about 240 exhibitors. So Devcom, the company that bought the running event from the guys at Formula 4 Media, are doing a good job. I looked over the exhibitor list. What is interesting is that there's still kind of a big hole with a number of the bigger footwear companies like Nike and Adidas, but more than made up by a number of running brands. One of the things I also noticed was it's an awful lot of CBD companies that are starting to pop up. I'm looking forward to this year's running event.
Hey, Neil, aren't you hosting some panel? Or I thought you guys were doing that down there.
No, we're doing Paul Kerwin from Channel Signal, a company that I work with, is doing we have created this vertically oriented review insights platform called Runner to Runner. Just gave us a little plug there. And we're going to be debuting it. Basically, it includes the comments and reviews from over 200,000 runners that were collected over the last 45 days. And what we've done is we've created this way that makes it very easy to be able to glean valuable insights, strategy, and be able to understand exactly what, the consumers are saying. I mean, look, if you want to know what your consumers think about you, the best answer is just go ask them. And this gives people a great way to go ask their consumers.
So we are going to charge you back for that plug. JP, where are you headed?
I just throw Neil softballs left and right. No, by the way, Neil, great entrepreneur hosting a happy hour there. Shower Pill. They'll be doing the run event happy hour. Justin Forsett's company.
What are they?
Former NFL guy. He created a all-in-one type of wipe. They're doing stuff with Barry's Orange Theory. It's like a gym wipe kind of concept on the go. So you can literally take your shower in your backpack, as he says. So I know they just got into Target and they're making some headway. So anyway, I'm going out to LA tomorrow or today to host with Kaseko Research, the Fitness and Active Brand Summit. It's a new event for the active lifestyle, broader fitness industry. So we're going to – it's a two-day event, more of a seller-buyer type of event with some private equity folks in the room that have invested in companies in our space. And then we're hosting CEOs on panels. So we'll open up with Tom Brady 12's CEO talking about the industry. And then the day is packed with companies like Hydro and Exhale Spa, Roan, L. Catterton is on another panel that I'm hosting alongside the M Plus guys with Barry. So it's a good kind of event to talk about where the industry's headed. I think it'll be good to report back after the event, because I think you're starting to see some softness in the market with some of these brands that have closed doors or even gone out of business. In the case of Kettlebell Kitchen, they recently shut their doors. So looking forward to it, and we'll definitely report back on how it went.
Hey, John, I have a question about this. You're dealing with a lot of these startups, and I know also a lot of companies that are in different levels of money raise. Do these CEOs and the people that you talk to, do you think that they are really kind of tuned into what's going on in the industry, or are they just kind of hoping that their product latches on?
That's a good question. I think from the ground seed stage level to a certain point, maybe like 10 million or even 20 million in revenues, the more I talk to like a lot of later stage folks and even companies who've raised 20, 30 million, like a Hydro, the more I talk to them, they don't seem to be as in tune. And I just think that there's just so much going on. It's just harder and harder, because it's never been easier to start a company. It's been harder to reach a consumer. So I think everybody's so dug into it. But Neil, I will be sad that you won't be there to ask your question, because I know that we'll open up our Catterton and Barry's panel for questions, and you're always the first to raise your hand.
Mike, sorry to step on the format, but this kind of came right, kind of came up as we were talking about it.
Well, speaking of format and keeping to doing things on a regular basis, Neil ventured out on Black Friday. What did you see?
Well, what I saw was an awful lot of people out in the stores. What I like to do on Black Friday is I do avoid the malls. I will kind of throw that right out there. But I did go into places like Best Buy, Dick's Sporting Goods, Target, a couple of other smaller specialty stores. And what I saw, frankly, were people buying, long lines, unfortunately, at the cash registers. I wish retailers would understand that process a little bit more and try to make it a little bit more customer friendly. But still, there were long lines at a lot of the cash registers. The one thing I did notice was that there was an awful lot of promo activity going on. I'm guessing that retailers don't want to take any chances, in terms of being able to take advantage. The data that I've been seeing from both the National Retail Federation that they put out from Prosper Inc., they're looking at about a 3.8 to 4.2 year-over-year increase at a holiday sales. There was about 165 million Americans. That's right, 165 million that were doing some sort of shopping, and I don't mean grocery shopping, but they were doing some sort of holiday shopping over the over the holiday weekend. And that's a big number. So
sadly, that's more people than voted in 2016, but that's a completely different conversation.
That is kind of sad, Mike. It's an interesting, that was an interesting little factoid that you brought up there. But, I think what's important is to be able to see if that retailers are going to be able to sustain this kind of enthusiasm. Where we are seeing consumer sentiment, if you believe in that sort of thing, has been positive. Consumers have indicated they are willing to spend more this holiday season. But there continues to be, a number of, headwinds swirling around. And, one of the things that we talk about, is the availability of money and debt. And there's just a number of things. But overall, right now, I saw a good start to the holiday weekend, Mike and John.
Well, if JP was out at where were you, JP? Big fancy store?
I literally never go to Bloomingdale's. Definitely way too nice for my taste. But I did, Neil, I thought I read Adobe Analytics. I thought they said this year was the first year mobile surpassed brick and mortar shopping for Black Friday. Did anybody see that? Or did I make this up?
The number I saw was that mobile shopping was up, pretty seriously, about 21% year over year. I don't think that mobile shopping has necessarily eclipsed, traditional brick and mortar, especially in the early stages of the shopping season. I do think it may, you know, we may continue to see it grow, you know, this holiday season. But I think they said it was up 21% year over year, John.
That's actually, Neil, what I had. It was something like $7.4 billion, which was actually below estimates, but still a 20% increase over 2018. And I think that's what everybody's then predicting what today will be and, you know, what it could be. Speaking, you mentioned debt, Neil, and this is something that I don't think we'll get too deep into on this conversation. But if there are listeners that are experts in this subject, we'd love to bring you on. I think Neil has some people that he knows. But there was an article in the Washington Post that corporate debt is about to reach $10 trillion. And not that it's something that's going to cause problems today, but they are raising warnings. But just some statistics, and I'd love your guys's, you know, thoughts on this. $10 trillion is 47% of our total economy. That number has doubled since the year of year 2000. And, you know, the bonds used to finance much of that debt now are sitting only one notch above junk bonds. And I think of our industry, and there's a handful of publicly traded brands that have taken on significant debt in the last couple of years. What's the intention with that debt?
Well, you know, I was over the weekend, I played a lot of golf, as you can probably imagine. It was a beautiful weather weekend. And one of my friends is, I consider to be one of those financial experts. I don't want to say his name necessarily. He works, you know, within the financial planning area and all of that. And, you know, Kenny, gave his first name, but not his last name. Beep. But, you know, what he said to me on one of the, we were waiting for one of the other players to play, is that, you know, what he's seeing out there, he says, is in a number of ways is very similar to what happened in 2007 and 2008. And he fears that, you know, we could be, you know, heading in that direction again, in that, you know, a lot of the regulations have been loosened up. Companies are acquiring a lot of debt, Mike, just like you mentioned. You know, they're hoping, you know, they're of course always hoping that they're going to be able to service that debt because there's a priority, or there's a priority, I guess I said that, in how debt is paid back. So, you know, I think we're right now, we're heading into some interesting times financially. But, you know, look, corporate debt is up. The government's deficit is way up. You know, consumer debt luckily is not way up, but you know, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of winds that are swirling around right now, Mike.
But here's something I'd love to ask JP about, because you spend a lot of time with folks in private equity, is that, you know, this is the public side. I mean, this is the publicly traded side, that, you know, and how debt is being used to influence things. But there are a lot of private equity folks that say they have so much cash on hand that they couldn't deploy it, you know, quickly enough, because there's not enough things to deploy it against. And so I guess my question is, you know, where's the innovation?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, Mike, talking about how, you know, historically low interest rates, which by all regard, in my opinion, has led to all this corporate debt or a large, you know, incentive behind it. You know, how that affects the private markets with private equity, even venture capital. And I think, you know, I've heard the same thing. There are a lot of folks who raised and continue to raise. In fact, my friend at MEP Capital, they just closed another fund, a $75 million fund in New York. And the fact is, you know, when you raise that fund, if it's just sitting there and not collecting alpha, as they call it, or a return, you know, I think you're going to see and have seen in the past a lot of investors get trigger happy and deploy capital in deals that they otherwise should not have been a part of, whether that is a more expensive round or a company who they would normally not have financed, because the other alternative is let that money, you know, sit there for years in a fund that isn't collecting a return. So it's definitely going to be almost a seesaw effect. It's just going to be interesting to watch some of the rounds and other companies come out as things like Connected Fitness keep, you know, taking off. Whoop just raised $55 million, which is crazy. So I think it'll be interesting to kind of watch going forward.
Speaking of whooping it up, Neil, you had a really great interview with why don't you tell the listeners about the interview?
Yeah, we interviewed Dan Sullivan, the head of running or performance running for Skechers. just a little bit of a side note, what's interesting is that Skechers has now broken into, you know, the numbers, or at least they've got 1% market share, which is the kind of minimum that we see in a number of the data sources that I work with and look at. So, you know, we talked to Dan. Skechers, not known as a performance brand, but they really want to make you know, themselves known. They want to put their foot down in that category. And you know, he talks about how retailers are responding. He talks about how consumers are responding. And then he also talked a little bit about their plans as they continue to sponsor races and get more involved in performance running.
Excellent. Well, let's get to the interview.
Welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. We're really pleased to have Dan Sullivan, the National Sales Manager for the running division at Skechers. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Neil, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're very welcome. Dan, we always like to start off with our guests by getting a little bit of the background, you know, where are you from originally? Where'd you go to college? And then really, you know, where did you work and how, and what are those things that kind of got you to this point with Skechers?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I grew up in Foxborough, Massachusetts, home of the Patriots.
Oy.
Yeah, I had to throw that in there.
Oy.
I was a ball boy for them back in the day. So it's.
Are you the guy that was responsible for Inflategate or whatever they called that?
No, but he used to be my roommate when we would be on the road back in the 80s, 1980s. So, but when I was a ball boy, we were awful. We were terrible. So people don't remember that. We couldn't barely win a game. So
was that the Steve Grogan years?
It was Steve Grogan, Tony Eason, John Hanna. Exactly. Yeah. Back in the 80s. So that was my era. Actually, you know what? We did go to the Super Bowl. We got embarrassed by the Bears in 85.
I remember. But,
yeah. So anyway, so I grew up in Foxborough. I went to the University of Rhode Island. I played football at URI, which was a great experience for me. And then from there, I thought I wanted to get in college coaching, football coaching. My dad was a high school coach. So I coached at Harvard with Tim Murphy. Tim Murphy was the head coach. I coached the quarterbacks and receivers. And so did that for about a year and a half and realized the coaching gig is probably not exactly what I wanted to do. And I always had a passion for footwear and shoes. And that led me to Saucony. You know, Reebok was kind of the hot brand at the time, Reebok and Nike, and had an opportunity to go work at Saucony, the running business. So that was kind of the start of my career. And then, I haven't looked back. It's been, you know, that was 1996 when I joined Saucony, and I was there for a while and customer service, and kind of worked my way up and went over to New Balance and the product management role, and was at New Balance for about 8 years. Till about 2010. And then I went back to Saucony as vice president of product. And I ran the product group over there for about 6 years. And then I moved over to be vice president of sales at Saucony. And then about 11 months ago, almost a year ago here, I transitioned over to Skechers to help them get their running business, you know, going even further than it is right now.
You know, it sounds, you know, like Mike and John and I, you know, we all have this passion for sport and the different activities. And, you know, obviously you've had that football background. Tell me where the running background comes from, the running passion comes from.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because people look at me and be like, oh, you know, do you run marathon? And I go, no. You know? I'm not a runner. I run every day. You know, I run my 3 to 5 miles every day. For me, it's been more of a, you know, kind of health and wellness and just overall that whole world, you know. So while I'm not an elite runner like a lot of people in this industry are that I work with, I think I bring a different perspective a lot of times. I bring that team mentality a lot of times from my experiences, which is a little bit different than the runner mentality. So, you know, on the teams that I've worked with and on the teams that I have on my, you know, with my group here, I like kind of the different mentalities and different aspects of what people bring from different sports. I think it really helps build a better team overall. So not a pure runner, follow the sport, amazed at what these amazing athletes can do. Cause I am not that tough and I couldn't run like that and have the willpower to get through those, those races, but I just do it more on a casual health and fitness perspective.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about kind of that health and wellness approach. I think when people talk about, you know, performance running, I mean, while I don't have the exact statistics, although I am kind of the data guy on our team here, you know, I would bet you that the majority of people that are buying performance running shoes are really using them just for overall health and wellness, whether they're running or participating in some other related activities. What do you think about that, Dan? Do you think we sometimes get a little bit too focused when we talk about performance run on the actual running sport and not kind of the bigger picture?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the majority of people are either buying the shoes to walk in or just to slowly jog in. But I do like the thought that, you kind of focus on that core consumer, you know, the core consumer, what the performance person is looking for. And I think from there, a lot of good things can happen, you know, and the product can be used by, you know, the casual consumer. Yeah. It's tough to go the other way. It's tough to design something for the casual consumer and target more, you know, that elite runner. So, but I agree with you. Yeah. The majority of the business is absolutely in that, you know, that casual everyday runner, walker type consumer.
You know, as someone that has been tracking the footwear business for quite some time, in fact, like when you mentioned the fact that you know, when you started out, Reebok was one of the more popular brands. I actually remember those days very well. I actually remember those days when Reebok, I think, had a higher market share, in fact, than Nike.
Absolutely.
And not just in running, I'm talking overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I cut you off.
No problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, they stormed on the scene, right?
Oh, it was
amazing.
It was. And I remember, you know, I remember even buying my first pair of Reeboks, but, you know, which maybe wasn't, you know, I can't say that I participated in, let's say, the classic styles or, you know, even some of those aerobic styles, for lack of a better word. You know, I did, you know, I did jump on the bandwagon, you know, way back when, you know, with Reebok. You know, Dan, switching gears a little bit. You know, Skechers has more of a history in being a value-oriented brand, but also has a history in being a comfort-oriented brand. How does that all play into the move into performance running in general?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, it's, you know, when people think of Skechers, they think comfort, quality, and value. You know, those are the three words that come to mind when we do consumer tests and we're trying to, you know, understand our brand a little bit more. I think it comes, you know, when most brands have obviously started from more of a, you know, when you look at the top brands in the world, Adidas and Nike and, you know, and Reebok, I guess, is up there as well. And Puma, and you look at those brands and they're all rooted in performance. They've kind of rooted themselves in performance and have gone the other way to some extent, more of that sport style or sport lifestyle. We've been the completely opposite way. We've started more in the casual world, the women's world. And, you know, our management team, our leadership team wants to drive our brand the other way into performance. We're a massive brand globally, $5 billion brand. We keep breaking record quarter after quarter here. And they're like, hey, there's an opportunity for us to go the other way. Why do we have to do it the way that everybody else has done it? And I think that's what's pretty unique about Skechers. We do things very differently here. It's an amazing place. And you just see the results. 27 years in business, and just it is incredible what a machine here. So I guess the question is, how do you overcome potentially those kind of monikers about what your brand represents? Well, if you look at it, comfort is probably the number one criteria for everybody when they look at buying a running shoe. And your question earlier is about, you know, the everyday average consumer looking for just, you know, they're looking for comfort. You know, they're looking for comfort. That kind of defines their performance. You know, if the shoe is giving you blisters or it just doesn't feel right, it's not going to win. It might look right, but if it doesn't feel right and it's not comfortable, it's not going to win. So I think that's one of the key things that Skechers can bring to the equation with performance running. But at the same time, we have to do things differently. We can't just create another Brooks Ghost or a Saucony Ride, or, you know, we can't do the same thing, because wouldn't be authentic. It wouldn't be authentic for our brand to kind of create, you know, new opportunity there. But we got to do things differently. We got to find a niche. We got to find, our voice, our point of view, And we're starting to do that. You know, we've started 7-8 years ago, and it's going to take a long time, you know, because the running consumer is very loyal to their brand and what they want. So,
Dan, what's been the overall reaction, you know, as you've been approaching specialty run dealers in particular, you know, and talking about the Skechers brand and trying to gain distribution? What sort of feedback are you getting back from the retailers, out of curiosity?
Neil, you know, it's obviously mixed. You know, a lot of people say, hey, Dan, why don't you guys rebrand it? Why don't you come up with a new brand? So-and-so by Skechers, you know, I think it would help you guys. And you know what? Ultimately, we want to elevate the Skechers brand. We want to give more authenticity, more credibility, and get into that performance space. We just signed Clayton Kershaw from the Dodgers baseball. I know it's not running, but again, you know, the vision of our business down the road is performance, and you know, and it starts with running. So the reaction from the running deal. So it's interesting. 2 weeks ago, I'm out here in Manhattan Beach, and I have 10 of the top run specialty dealers. I have a conference out here with them, and I brought them in, and we talked business. And I said, hey, listen, there's nothing. Don't hold back. You know, like, you know, we had our Michael Greenberg, we have our president of our company, Rick Graham, our SVP, you know, we have some high leadership people in the meetings. And I said, don't hold back. Tell us, you know, your thoughts about what we need to do. And, you know, and some of the people were like, hey, I think you need to change your brand. And other people were like, you know, you got a good niche here. You know, we have a few products that are servicing a niche that are actually working really well. The Razor 3 is the Editor's Choice Gear of the Year award from Runner's World this year. We have something here. So again, it's doing something different. It's having a point of view. We can't do what the other brands are doing and expect to be successful. We have to have a unique design aesthetic. We have to have a unique innovation, material, technology story. And we do. And now it's like, and now it's just trying to slowly convert people, you know, convert the staff, people on the floor, into our products, and hopefully, you know, they try it on and they love it. And then, you know, we have a believer, and it's a slow process, but, I'm excited. I wouldn't have come here if I wasn't excited about what we're doing from an innovation perspective, design perspective, and, you know, just the opportunity here that I think Skechers over the long haul can make a meaningful impact in this running specialty business.
You know, I've worked with the Skechers brand for a long time. I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting. I could just see the look on Robert Greenberg's face when somebody says, well, you know, maybe you should come up with a sub-brand or something like that. I can just imagine the look on his face when that particular sentence was said. I mean, he's, you know, they've obviously built the Skechers brand, just like you said, into a $5 billion worldwide brand, and, you know, done an amazing job over the years.
Well, they didn't say it when he was in the meeting, but they loved him. He came in, and boy, he's a leader and charismatic, and they were in awe. They were like, wow, this is pretty amazing that not only has he created a billion-dollar business with LA Gear, and he's come here and he's done it as well. So you know, if anybody can do it, he can do it, and his team can do it. So I think they were in awe of him, which was pretty awesome.
Hey, we're talking with Dan Sullivan, National Sales Manager for Performance Running at Skechers. And Dan, of course, brings a long history in the running business at Saucony and New Balance. And, you know, we've had some really lively conversation. I want to switch gears a little bit, Dan. And you know, I'm not going to ask you to, you know, share any secrets or anything. But overall, what do you see as some of the leading edge trends, you know, in the performance running category? What are people talking about right now?
Well, I think obviously the big news in the market is the carbon story. You know, carbon has become almost a category unto itself. It's, you know, it's not even just plastic plates. It's like, all right, does it have carbon? Is it, you know, is that stiffer forefoot creating more energy return and making me more efficient so I can shave seconds off of my race and create a PR? And I think within, you know, it's not even just the elite world now. You know, I was just running along the boardwalk this morning, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach area. And it was amazing. Just the average runner is wearing, you know, the 4%, you know, the Nike shoe and the Carbon X from Hoka. And, you know, obviously New Balance has one out, and we have one coming out very soon as well. You know, we have obviously at the beginning of the year, we have a version of that, you know, a shoe with a carbon plate coming out. So I think that's kind of the latest trend in the marketplace right now. It's funny how the industry just, it kind of shifts and evolves. And at some point it's about flexibility and stability, and you know, now it's been lightweight. People are like, all right, how do we shave weight out of a shoe? Because you can make it as stable by using new technologies and new innovation. And it's about energy return. Hey, how am I going to, you know, make a shoe feel really springy and but super light? Because that's exactly what I want. So I think the carbon story is kind of the big, you know, the big story. You know, people that a little bit stiffer forefoot, as opposed to that flexible story that's been out there. I think that's kind of
Dan, let me ask you a question. When you're out and about, you know, when you're in Hermosa Beach or when you're back home in Boston and you're on the running trail or you're just on the street, let me ask you a question. Are you kind of counting in your head what shoes people are wearing and trying to keep like a mental count just out of curiosity?
Oh my God. That's all I do all the time. My wife always says that to me. She goes, pick your head up, act like you have confidence. I'm like, no, I'm just staring at people's feet. It's just, yeah, it's amazing to me, you know, and it's amazing working for Skechers too. And I see, I'm like, oh my God, there's so many Skechers out there. But yeah, I do that all the time. I want to know what the trends are, where things are going, and, you know, like, what are the hot brands out there?
Yeah. I was in Orlando Airport earlier in the week, and I was actually sitting in the kind of middle rotunda, if you've ever been to Orlando. And, you know, I kind of took out a piece of paper and I was just counting, you know, the brands, the shoes that I saw, you know, what people were wearing. And I know that sounds kind of goofy to some people, but you know, it was very interesting to kind of get some perspective on, you know, what people are actually wearing. So I definitely understand where you're coming from on that, Dan.
Oh, I'm a shoe geek, you know, a shoe geek at heart. You know, I just love it. I love it.
It seems right now that some of the newer brands, and I'll throw Hoka 1-1 into that and On Running, you know, into kind of that category, and are gobbling up some of this extra market share. You know, do you see that as a challenge, or do you see that as really a way to kind of, you know, to create a bigger wave, so to speak? Because we all know, you know, the saying that all boats go up on a rising tide. You know, is it a competitive situation, or are Hoka and On Running kind of making the wave bigger and everybody's going up on that bigger wave?
That's an awesome question. And they're going up on the bigger wave without a doubt, because it creates opportunity for other brands. So, you know, 5 years ago, there were core four brands and that was it. And they own 90% of the market share. In today's day and age, with the internet and social media and ways you can market, if you can create a point of difference and come out with a unique product, you have an opportunity. And that's what I see with Skechers. I mean, Hoka, you know, amazing product. 10 years ago that, you know, they came out and people like, there's no way. Boom. They're a core brand now. They're a top three brand in run specialty right now, which is pretty amazing. On the same way, they have a unique point of view, a unique aesthetic, unique technology story that, you know, the shoes look amazing and they've been able to capture market share. And there's other brands like Ultra that are out there that have a point of difference. And, you know, the point of difference might start as really niche. And if you can carve out that niche and own it, and then you can kind of grow and expand from there. And I think it gives us opportunity as well. So I'm excited that these brands are having success in growing. And because I'll tell you, the run dealers that were out here, you know, 2 weeks ago, that's the conversation they were having. Hey, we're in these doors. They're like, hey, there's opportunity. And I think they want to diversify as well. They don't want to have two or three or four brands dominate their market share. They're looking for unique, new, and different. And I think that's what's going on in the industry. You know, there are brands, you know, we talk about the carbon, we talk about flexibility. There's brands that have a unique point of view, and the consumer today can get almost anything they want based on what, you know, what works for them. And there's no one thing fits all perspective here. It's like, hey, you know, I like this brand, I like this style, I like this fit, and boom, there's an opportunity.
Hey, we're talking with Dan Sullivan, National Sales Manager for Performance Running for Skechers. Dan, a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned the Nike Zoom Vaporfly 4%. And, you know, as someone that does follow the industry, you know, recently in the New York Times, there was an article where someone suggested that the shoe was, and I use air quotes here, but of course, we're on a podcast, you can't see it, illegal, that the race sanctioning organizations should think about banning the shoe. What's your feeling about that?
I think if you can create innovation and technology to make people run faster and do things, why not? You know, like, I don't know, you know, it's like, boy, kudos to Nike for creating, you know, amazing innovation that's been able to deliver somebody to run faster than it's ever been run before. So I'm for it. I'm for innovation. I'm for pushing the boundaries of technology to, you know, push the human limits. I think it's pretty exciting.
It sounds like it's going to, you know, Nike pushing the limits, of course, is going to just put a little bit more pressure on all the other brands to get better. But I guess that's really what, you know, competition's all about.
Exactly. I think they do that. I think Nike does a great job of that. It's, you know, more competition out there, people innovating and pushing it. I think it makes everybody better. As you said earlier, it rises all boats. I agree with that.
So I want to thank Dan Sullivan, National Sales Manager for Skechers Performance, specifically Skechers Performance Run, coming on the Sport Lifestyle podcast today. So Dan, thanks a lot and have a good rest of your day.
Neil, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Take care. We'll see you.